What makes someone want to use a product over and over and over? There's a bunch of factors that go into that question. Probably the most important is, does it actually solve the problem, achieve its goal? But what I don't hear talked about enough is in design. How is it constructed? How does it look? Is it easy to use? Is it intuitive? And all of these things, there's so much going on in Bitcoin. A lot of the focus is on the tech side, or you should just get it, that Bitcoin solves XYZ thing. But there's a whole space of design that people are trying to create easier to use wallets, improve UX, make things aesthetically pleasing, and just make it so it's natural that as you open an app, for example, that you know exactly what to do. And so today, I got on two Bitcoin design wizards at two different companies that have been doing some really great work that caught my eye, and I wanted to explore this topic further. So today I have Skylar from Finite Supply and Eric, the lead designer at Hoseki. And we're talking about design. What is design? What is good design versus bad design? What does good design look like within Bitcoin? And a bunch of other topics. This episode, I went in hoping it would be somewhat tactical. And by the end, I realized that being a tactician within the design space is probably the wrong mindset. And you need to start from first principles and really grasp these things, because there's so much that goes in to good design. And I think you'll understand what I mean when you listen to this episode. And by the end, I'm very curious what you guys thought of this. So without further ado, let's jump into this great episode with Skylar and Eric on Bitcoin design.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Boom. We're in. Eric, Skylar, how you guys doing today?
Doing well, man. All
Thanks
is well.
For having us.
Glad to have you guys. This one's going to be fun because I talked to a lot of founders, and everyone kind of has like their passions. Building cool product is one of them, mainly in like the tech side, like solving tricky problems. Go to market, not that sexy. Bitcoin design, I don't hear about it enough. So I think this is going to be, you know, a learning experience for not just me, but people listening to this podcast. So I want to just jump straight in with a seemingly simple question, which is, what is design? Not good or bad, but just as a broad concept, what is design? And whoever wants to go first, just jump in.
Yeah, I don't know.
Eric,
that's a fun
one. I want to nominate Eric for this.
Sure.
This is a hard one.
Yeah. It really depends who you ask. It's like, it depends, is the classic cliche. Yeah. So I guess, like, to start, like, a common misconception, sometimes people think that design is how something looks. Oftentimes that's their first touch point, is visually how does something look, and they think that's design. I think that that's part of it. That's certainly a large part of it, but that's not all of it. I would say that design, to me, it's not pure art. It's not pure aesthetics, because it's at its core, it's utilitarian. It's about how something works, or trying to create something that works. Its primary goal should be useful rather than beautiful. That's not to say it can't be both, but design is ultimately about, you know, using certain things to solve a problem. And then in that ways, I think that design kind of has a lot in common with development, in that its purpose is to solve a problem. And in the context of kind of UX design, user experience design, we base a lot of what we do on these things called like Gestalt principles. And for the people that may be unfamiliar, like Gestalt refers to a field of psychology that studies human perception and recognition, and kind of why people make the connections that they do, how you know, certain things influence their perception. And in design, we refer to these Gestalt principles like contrast, repetition, symmetry, senses of closure, of proximity, order. These kind of elements play a role, and we kind of apply these things in order to solve a problem, and in order to make it easier to solve a problem. So when I think of design, it's often about how can we kind of apply these principles, these techniques, these tools in order to solve a problem. And obviously, you know, aesthetics matter, and that's a part of it. But like I said earlier, that's not all.
Yeah, that's good. That was a great summary. I would echo a lot of that. One thing I kind of go back to a lot when people talk about this is just the dictionary definition, which I like, which is a plan or drawing produced to show the look and function or workings of something, like something that's being built or mm-hmm. a garment or... And I kind of like this because it's like a lot of what we do as designers is document or describe how something is supposed to work. It's not the actual building. It's like the plan for the building.
Mm-hmm.
And I like going back to this definition too, because it helps engineers realize that designers should be a partner in the building of the thing, not something you do at the end, or you have them do something at the end, like make it pretty or whatever. It's like, It can work that way, obviously, sometimes, but this is like teeing up the problem of like the Bitcoin space, but it's like the plan happens before the building, typically, and that's how like buildings were built. It's how, you know, it's like how the process has always kind of gone. So I like going back to the dictionary definition because it just kind of puts the designer first, I think that's the proper, it's a really good way to do it, because if you have a good designer working with good engineers, you can plan before you build, instead of build and then plan and then make it look pretty, as they like to say. So, that's the only thing I would really add. I think it complements a lot of what Eric said, but, another thing is like, there is this aesthetic element in one of the definitions of design, which is like an arrangement of lines or shapes created to form a decoration. So there is space for this concept of like, a design can just be something that is pretty itself. Like, it doesn't necessarily need to be utilitarian.
Yeah.
But if you look at the primary definition, it is a very utilitarian thing. It's like a plan to build something. So I like those two definitions. They are not like perfectly compatible, but they kind of sit next to each other and complement each other, and they allow the designer to like have a toolbox of like, okay, I'm doing a very utilitarian thing, or I'm doing something just for the sake of doing it because it's cool, because it's fun or beautiful. It's just an arrangement of complementary shapes and like beauty. So yeah, I think that's, I don't have much more to add, but those are the things I think about when it comes to design.
It's good framing.
This is fantastic. This is gonna be a banger episode. I'm like scribbling notes as fast as I can go.
That's awesome.
So just to recap some of that, the first thing we touched on was most people think of design as just like the way something looks. It's the aesthetics of it, and it goes much deeper than that. There's a utility aspect. We talk a lot about game theory in Bitcoin, and it seems like in design there's like a psychology aspect of like trying to get into the mind of your user. And like, when they look at this page, how do I make them flow through this naturally so that they can just like, they think good design is like, you think less about what to do next, almost, is what comes to mind as you guys are talking. Skyler, you mentioned like, there's like the utility aspect, which probably seems like that's more in the Bitcoin space because we're having them do an action. But you can also just have a beautiful website that for its own purposes is aesthetically pleasing. So we opened up a whole can of worms. Let's double click on the psychology piece. I like that one a lot. And like the getting in the mind of the user. And maybe this dovetails into, now that we have a broad concept loosely of what design is, how do we start to go into what good design is in the context of Bitcoin? Broad question. It's going to get very deep very fast. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to kick it off, Skyler? I have some ideas, but...
Yeah, I mean... Well, you go with your ideas, because I think I need a little bit more time.
Sure. So good design. I think one thing that you touched on, Jacob, was that like it kind of... Did you say that it preemptively solves something that you might not be aware of or hadn't thought about? I think like that is a part of something, and the part of the something that I'm referring to is like that's like an example of like a small moment of like of delight. And I think we've all used an application or even like a tool. It doesn't have to be software. Like I was using a drill, for example, the other day, and I like I drilled a little bit too deep, and then I needed to like do the reverse setting. And I didn't know immediately where the reverse setting was, but it was like toggled like right underneath. Maybe this is common among all drills. I'm kind of showing how much I know, but it was like this little switch like right underneath it. And I just intuitively kind of moved my index finger. I was like, I think this is it. And then pushed it to the left, and then it reversed. And like that was a very pleasant thing. I kind of felt like, oh, nice. Like that made sense. I was able to just like kind of intuitively do this thing, and then like immediately like it functioned in the way that I thought it would. And that was like a very like little pleasant interaction I had. And I think when you can put like good design is something that has these little like pleasant moments of interactions. It could be something like that example I gave you. It could also be like if you're using an app to pick up your package, and then after you picked it up, when you like swipe, there was a nice little micro animation and like a haptic vibration, and maybe the copy it said something. It was written in a way that was very human and personable, and you like the way that it was written, like copy, like that could be like an example of good design. So when all these things kind of work together in order to make you feel like connected with like the tool that you were using, and you felt very comfortable with it, and I think most importantly, like it was kind of sticky, so like you would also want to then use it again because you kind of had a nice little experience, so you want to come back and feel that again. Something that captures an experience like that, I would qualify as good, and it's very dependent on kind of what feature you're talking about or what type of tool you're talking about. But when I think of something that's good design, I would say it's something that kind of had a little moment of delight when I used it, and it didn't just work kind of at the bare minimum. It had a little bit of something special.
Yeah, I think that's right. So there's like layers, I think, of, you know, good, better, best, and then maybe even like higher spiritual layers of that, and I'll get into that. But like basically, I think a basic good design is something that solves your problem effectively, and that's it. It just solves the problem for you effectively. And humans have like millions of different types of like problems, right? The world is not perfect, it's broken, and so there's like infinite opportunities for things to be solved. And the human mind can like create more problems out of nothing. So there's even more things to solve because it's like they can multiply. That said, like maybe not every problem should attempt to be solved. So like sometimes products don't actually solve the right problem. So like a lot of drugs, for example, I would say like that's a like well-designed product because it like solves the problem of the human, but it actually is destroying the human. So and like certain levels of use destroy the human even more. And so it's like, is it good design? Yeah, it like solves the problem, but then that gets to like the spiritual thing I mentioned. It's just like, is this actually like good for humans to do? It's like, yeah, they maybe want to do it and maybe they're doing it, but then I think like the best designs are the designs that like solve a problem for the human, they're beneficial to the world, and like they allow for human flourishing. So there's like, yeah, it's like a lot of altcoins are like technically like well designed for gambling or something, but like does it qualify these like higher levels of like good? No, a lot of the times they don't, you know. And a lot of like libertarians, I think, kind of don't like this type of thinking because it sounds a little bit paternalistic or like, you know, maybe even totalitarian. But like I just think I come from it from this perspective of like truth, beauty, and goodness are real. Just like morality, like there's like these like natural law, like there's all these things that like govern the universe. And it's the designer's job to ask the questions of like, is this good? Is this beautiful? Is this true? should it be designed in this way or should it be created in this way? So yeah, it's like probably not in the normal like standard definitions of like what is good design, but like that's kind of like where I end up going to. It's hard to like live in that space when you're actually trying to work on design, but I think like ultimately we should really get to that point of like, should I actually be designing this? So yeah, that's the end of my rant.
No, that's good. That's spicy. I guess the first thing I think about is like, how are designers, in what ways do you think that designers could be qualified to make that judgment about like, you know, morality or whatever? Like if you look at like something like the Catholic Church, well, yeah, there's like ecclesiastical people who have that kind of training. They've studied theology. They know about the ecumenical councils or whatever, and they have the ability to make these judgments as to, you know, what is moral or whatnot. Yeah. But like maybe some people don't have that kind of training and they're not qualified to make those kind of judgments, right? You know?
I mean, I think arguably most people are not qualified to do that anymore. I mean, I saw this tweet today that said it had all these dates like going back to like, I don't know, zero. And they were just like, education is the cultivation of virtue. Education is the cultivation of virtue. Like over and over and over again. And then it was like 20 or like 2000. It's like education is preparation for college or something. Or I don't know. Maybe it was pretty earlier. It was like maybe 1960 or something. 1971. Let's put it in 1971. But like basically there's this idea that like people were being educated to be virtuous, and like virtuous people typically have the ability to make moral judgments well. So maybe this is like the answer. It's like, I don't think anyone's really qualified to do this anymore, like very few people. And so that's why maybe the world is like why it's as broken as it is. But like this is something I think Bitcoiners should get more serious on, is like cultivate virtue so that you can make really good decisions when you have like all the money, because that's what's going to happen. And the next like group of people that have all the money like should be good people, you know. And I'm not necessarily saying what's right and wrong, but I'm just saying like you should be trying to figure that out. You know, so yeah, I think it's a good question. Like who is capable of doing this? I don't know, but like we have to figure it out.
Yeah, or you have to draw your own like your own authority or your own resource for morality. Like libertarians default to like the non-aggression principle or whatever. A Christian might default to like what, you know, they teach like in your church or whatever. I don't know, some atheists might read Dawkins or something. I don't know what they read, but they might derive it from like a Sam Harris podcast or something. It's like maximum like utilitarian ethics. So like everyone has to kind of form their own moral framing, because it sounds like you have a very strong like belief in, like you mentioned earlier, like there is like objective truth, objective morality. So like that, I assume that comes from somewhere. You have some North Star or some principle. I don't know if it's conclusions that you've come to or whatever the case may be, but it sounds like you have a strong sense of that. So for you, maybe it's easier to make those judgments because you have a point of reference.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think like the North Star, but I wouldn't say it's like easy or that I'm like even good at it, but it's like, it's something I think about when I create stuff, you know, like it's like why some jobs I couldn't stay at for longer than like 2 years. Cause I'm like, dude, what am I even doing? Like, you know,
okay, hold on.
It just gets to a point.
Let me jump in just a sec, because you guys are breaking my brain. This is super interesting. And now we're getting into like philosophy, which for like an hour, 100%.
Yeah.
but you started with like good design is it achieves its end goal, but that's a lacking definition. But what comes to mind to me is that we're in the Bitcoin space where we're like naturally somewhat ideological and see the world as somewhat broken. And there's room for improvement. But like you go to social media and you use that same definition, like the designer creates the doom scroll where it never quite ends, and you just pull the lottery wheel one more time. And it's like, is that good for society? I would say no, especially the more I see social media decaying people's, you know, attention span and stuff and ability to connect. But would you guys put yourselves in, and it's hard to be self-aware on this, of like, do you think that the way you guys view design is somewhat separate from the average designer that's at, say, a Web2 space?
Well, I would say I hadn't really thought about design from the point of view that Skylar brought up about like the role of the designer is to basically design responsibly or design in a way that is ethical or virtuous. So that's something kind of new that I've kind of been thinking about it as he brought that up. So I've always kind of considered just design from a very like utilitarian lens from like kind of the definition I gave earlier. In terms of like as it relates to the Bitcoin space, I think that your question was like, do we as designers in the Bitcoin space see our role differently? Was that the question?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't. My initial instinct is to say not necessarily. Yeah. I that's kind of a.
I would challenge that even looking at your work, Eric, is like what you choose to work on is a judgment, right? Like the fact that you're not working on, well, I don't know if you're working on this, but like the fact that you're not working on like how to get boomers more addicted or how to get boomers to argue more on Facebook is like basically a judgment and saying this is what I think the world needs, right? Like this is how I am going to contribute to the world. And the fact that you're focusing on like particularly eCash is like eCash has like these principles around it, right? That are like their moral judgments about the world, basically, some of them. Actually a lot of them. I mean, even coming going back to Chaum and like, you know, what he thought about the world is like there's this heritage of concepts like crypto anarchy and all these things, privacy is paramount, like all of these concepts that are, it's like this ideological baggage with eCash. So like focusing on that is like, I would say, what differentiates you from, you know, some Web3 designer that just floats around all these like trash projects and like will just do whatever, you know, like no principles, work on whatever casino, whatever degenerate like thing is possible. But like I think there is a difference. So like I would just like push on that and be like, you have chosen to focus on something for a reason, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I
So
would say like my initial reasoning was because I found it interesting, but like
yeah,
take
that's good.
why did I find it interesting?
Yeah.
Because it spoke to me, like
Yeah.
in a way that like some of the other things didn't, right? Like the nature of Bitcoin and the nature of eCash specifically, the way Chom wrote about it, and you know, privacy, these things, yeah, they did speak to me. They were important, they were valuable, they were worth me spending my time thinking about and contributing to push these things a little bit forward, a little bit better. So yeah, I definitely hear where you're coming from. I think there's some overlap. I just don't know if I ever really put the two together.
Yeah.
It was just interest.
But I mean, like, as far as like the job goes, there's a lot of similarities, right? Like we still have to look at the space, understand the problems, understand the users, produce products that like work and then see how they work and then like adjust them and then iterate and like go through that whole process. Like I think that process is just kind of like universal, but why we're here and why we're working on what we're working on, it's driven by like different things. And I would say that there is a difference between people that focus on Bitcoin building and everyone else. Like there's just something driving people to work on this. And it's like, I think that we should get more intentional and like understand that deeper because there's like something powerful about it, right? Like, so yeah, I think there is a difference, but
Yeah.
the work is similar, right?
Yep. Okay. I want to jump back into some tactical stuff. And for these questions, let's assume the designer and the engineers are aligned that this is a problem that's worth solving. So it's a good problem.
Yeah.
What, as a founder or as from your view, where are the biggest gaps in most projects? Like who's doing think they're killing it and really not doing well? Like where's the and almost like what's the state of Bitcoin design in your opinion? Like we use wallets, they just work. I don't know if it's a good wallet or not. I hate doing my seed phrase. Like there's all kinds of questions here. But like as a founder, what's and I kinda wanna start from like the negative. Like what are most founders doing wrong in design, and then we can work our way towards the good, or like how people can improve.
I mean, something that immediately comes to mind is, and it's very common in this space, is like basically this idea that engineers have this idea and they want to build it, and then like it doesn't really matter how other people think about it. It's just like, I just have this idea and I want to build it, and that's just the way it is, and it just stops there. And I'm like, dude, that is like it's just a dead end. Like, that's such a dead end, and it's like very self-aggrandizing. It's like just selfish. I hate saying that word because it's like a little too like moralistic, but I'm like, you're only thinking about your interest, and that's mm-hmm. it, and like not connecting it to like, okay, who has this problem? Like, they just don't think about it in a bigger way. So that's just something I see that's very common. It's like, I think it should be this way, that's it. And there's no like conversation, like there's no Socratic humility of like, you know, I know some things, but I also know nothing, and like, I want to learn. So that's like the main thing that I see as the problem, is like, there's just a lot of engineers that think, I'm super smart, I want to solve this problem, that's it. And I'm like, that's just not enough. That's not enough.
Yeah.
I don't know, Eric, what do you think?
I mean, I would echo a lot of that. I would say that's been my experience. The core of it is that people, a lot of the space is dominated by engineers, and they have a tendency to put the technology or their own enthusiastic interest behind this specific, you know, application of a technology of Bitcoin first. And they put that before they put the people first. And ultimately, like, these are tools for people to use, and they can kind of over-engineer or overthink trying to just make something work without actually taking a step back and thinking about the people that use it. Yeah. And I think that kind of stems from some of the things that we're talking about the ethos behind Bitcoin, and the kind of people that work on it and that are drawn to it. They tend to be people that think very, very critically and deeply about not just Bitcoin on a technological level, but also at a social level.
Yeah.
And I think that this was very, very common among projects kind of like Bitcoin, protocols that were bootstrapped very early on. Things like kind of BitTorrent come to mind, or cryptography, obviously. So when these protocols were being bootstrapped or started, it was very, very important that you had this kind of enthusiast, this kind of like hardcore kind of engineer focus on these things. And you had people that had ethos and were applying this kind of thinking early on at the bootstrapping stage. But I think what founders need to realize is that if they're building a Bitcoin product that is for the consumer, at this stage, it's important to realize that, like, once you cross a certain stage, that it's no longer necessarily prudent to appeal to the enthusiast or putting the tech first. Yeah. You have to put the people first. And those people, they shouldn't have to have a requirement to understand, in this case, Bitcoin, or understand the technology. There shouldn't be a requirement that they have to read like a book or understand cryptography or anything like that. They shouldn't have to be an expert in this in order to use it.
Yeah.
It should just be something that they can just, in the case of Bitcoin, just download an application like Fetty or Enuts and then just use it, and it should work.
Yeah.
And when you don't put the people first and you put the technology first, I think founders can kind of miss that step and mm-hmm. focus too much on the enthusiastic nature of Bitcoin, and also like the Bitcoin enthusiast community that will respond to you as opposed to the consumer, which just doesn't care about that.
Yeah. Dang. That's super. Yeah, that's exactly right. And another thing about the space that I've realized just thinking about this problem is like, and talking to some developers, I'm like, why is this? You know, because some of the developers I've been hanging out with, like, they understand this problem. And I was asking him, I'm like, why is it like this? And he's like, well, one reason developers love working on Bitcoin is because it's super permissionless. So like, you don't really get that in fintech. Because it's mm-hmm. like, oh, dude, I have to get regulated. I have to, you know, there's like three fintech companies, you know, and like they're not, or like there's a bunch and then they're all just like, you know, using the same stack. And it's like, it's harder to just tinker with a fintech thing, way easier to tinker with Bitcoin, and engineers love to tinker. So it attracts like a lot of people like that, which is good. Like there are benefits to that, and it does keep the like sort of, I don't know, there's always these like pros and cons, because if you change some of these things, you could drastically like ruin Bitcoin or like dramatically change it rather. And so there's like, I'm very like conservative in that sense of like, if you make it harder to tinker with and you discourage engineers from coming, like that might be a worse situation than what we have now, you know? And also if you encourage way too many designers to come, that's actually disastrous too. Like I've been wanting to talk about this, but like I have seen places hire too many designers and like civil war broke out because the ideological makeup of this horde of designers is like was drastically opposed to this company that they came into. And like, it's pretty obvious for people that understand like designers, like what their ideological makeup is, but it was like incompatible. And so there's like these things that you got to be careful. Is like, we can't really have too many designers in. So there's like this, there's something to think about there.
This is super interesting because the founder's job is trying to create something from nothing. And there's kind of this balance between humility and like user feedback and conviction in the idea until it like finds
an insanity.
You gotta be a little crazy. That's definitely a, you know, insanity reined in is a powerful force. It's kind of like nuclear energy. But like in the engineer founder mind, most of the good founders understand the idea of the MVP and then getting quick user feedback and then quickly iterating. But I haven't heard it talked about for sure. And you can see how fast they go to market and how fast they listen, like actually doing user interviews for sure. But I don't think people talk about it or think about it in the sense of design. And this might lead to something you mentioned recently, Skylar, of like human centered design, which seems to me like a kind of like user feedback mechanism.
Yeah.
So they understand the MVP feedback iterate, but like, what does that look like in a design kind of like mindset?
Yeah. I mean, I just think like designers are they should just be part of that process. Like they can help clarify the scope. They can help like remind people of like why we're building what we're building, and like, does this feature actually align with what the users said or what we thought the user said? Like, is there, like, to me, like the designer is like, well, a good designer is well aware of this like iteration process as well. And I really see them as being integral in that iteration process where they can like help, like, you know, also like you don't have to develop an MVP.
Yes.
You know, like a designer can be there to actually help you build an MVP faster, like without hiring a developer, which is probably going to be cheaper. You know, it's like a lot of founders don't really think about this because they just want to build stuff. But it's like, dude, you can get an MVP and get information way faster and iterate like three times before you actually build for less than actually building code, like engineering a real thing. So that's like one big aspect I think a lot of founders are missing out on, is like, dude, you could iterate with design way faster and just purely design and then get your answers to that could potentially save your business way before.
And to be clear, you're talking about like, this is like, do a working mock-up in Figma.
Yeah.
Go out, get user feedback, iterate quickly before you start hiring some, you know, highly paid dev to put it into code, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I would love to see more of that, honestly. Mm. Yeah.
I find that whenever you show like a founder who maybe doesn't have experience with that, and then you actually show them like the user feedback, or they actually watch the recordings of someone interacting with the product, and they just realize how much they either assumed or they were just straight up wrong about how they thought people would react or think to their design, they immediately see the value of it. Because it's almost like they had that moment of, wow, I could have just like foot gunned myself and gone full speed ahead with, you know, this flow that I was thinking was so clear.
Yeah.
But, you know, four people had totally different interpretation of it. And they really kind of see the value of that very, very quickly once they actually experience it in real time and once they're deeply connected to it.
And like watching those people, dude, that like I've seen that happen so many times where they're just like, I cannot believe people think this about what we made. Like, I love that. Like, that is like one of the most fun parts about design is when you're surprised, like when users surprise you. Because what's cool about that is then that's like new opportunities that you can dig into. You're like, oh, I didn't realize they think that way. I can sell them another thing right there. Like, there's like all, it just opens up like all these new opportunities every time you learn more about how people are interacting with the thing you made. So yeah, like having people focused on that is like super valuable. But yeah, that dude, that is such a good point about the user feedback. Like, even myself, when I watch it, I'm like constantly just shocked of like, dude, I even what I thought would be understandable to them is not understandable to them. And there's like always this, I like calling it Socratic. It's like a Socratic design process where you're like,
I love when
you push out a design, it's like you're asking a question to the world and you're saying, does this make sense to you? And then you will listen for their answer. And then you just ask them another question with a new design. And it's like this like process of like discovering reality through this like interrogation of the users through the product. So, yeah, I think that's such a good point about the realization of how users actually use your thing versus how you think they should use your thing. It's just always different.
And there's just also so much that I uncover like when I open it up. When I open up a design to people to actually, there's so much feedback that I get that is after they say it and tell it to me, it was so simple. It was right in my face the whole time, but I didn't make that connection.
Dude.
And this
so
happens
true.
All the time.
Yeah.
Like I'll be hammering away at this design. I'll think I'll have like come up with this flow that very cleverly executes this thing.
Yeah.
Someone would just look at it and be like, well, why don't you just have toggles in a slider there? And then you're just like, oh fuck, that's so much. That's it. And like, and then this happens all the time.
Yeah.
I think even to the best designers, like it should be happening because there's no way, like if that's not happening to you, then like you're not, there's something wrong with your
omniscient, right? And you know everything and you're just like, oh yeah, I'm the best. You know, it's like, that's rare. Right. But yeah, like that concept of, you know, you're like, you're iterating with them, you're seeing what they do. It's just like, it's magic, man. And one thing I've noticed too, though, is like, I've observed this happening in the Bitcoin space too, where it's like someone has a product, right? And it's new and they're watching, like, you know, they go to Kenya or something and they're showing it to someone. And there's this tendency to like, want to explain the product to people and be like, oh no, put your finger there. And like, do this and do that. But like, I watch that and I'm like, no, like you should not have to explain it to them. Like you should stop trying to explain, stop trying to help them. Like when people orange pill people with wallets, it's like, I watch them and they're like, oh yeah, press that, press that, press that. And I'm like, if you have to tell them to do that, it's a problem, you know?
Yeah.
Instead, like a designer should like stand back and watch and be like, okay, what are you thinking right now? And like, why, you know, what are you looking for? And like, what are you trying to do? And the more you can do that, you can uncover, it's like, oh, they didn't see that scanner, or they didn't know that they had to scan something next. Or like, uncovering these problems is like, to me, a lot of the products in the space, like, just have never done this. They've always just told people how to use the product rather than like discovered, like, what is the easiest way to use this product? And then how do we build that? So yeah, like I would encourage a lot of people to figure out how to like pause themselves and just be like, figure out why people are struggling and then write it down and then you can help them. So like, I don't know if you've seen that, Eric, but like I see
100%.
That a lot. Yeah.
And it's also like, have that moment of humility or like to check your ego where like they're not wrong for like going into the settings to try to find what it is that you were going to do it, regardless of you put it right there at the bottom and you're like, oh, they should, why are they in there? Well, you know, like have that humility to be like, okay, let me understand this. Like maybe there's something wrong about, you know, the way that we have this organized or the steps that we have this in that causes them to go in here and try to find this here.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. It's a super good point. And I see this a lot as an investor where like, if they have a working, even just a Figma that can click through and it's good, it like 10x better than just a pitch deck. It just shows so much more of the time they've put in and how deep they're thinking about the problem. And the ability to, like, you know, do that first before you start writing code, it goes to what you guys are talking about of, like, first make sure you're solving the right problem, go into users. And it's super common to, you know, jump into a user interview and be like, so why do you like Bitcoin? And it's like, wait, that's a bad question. Are you sure they like Bitcoin? You got to go earlier and ask the right question, which is actually pretty effing hard.
It's so hard.
Just not moving their finger, like the X is on the top. It's like you're trying to talk to your mom, but how to use your iPhone. It's like, mom, come on, you understand this? Like, no, just let them do their thing. So, assuming someone wants to get better at this stuff, like, what are going back to like the tactics or the tools? Like, what's the best tools for people on engineering teams that want to play with this? Is Figma still like the GOAT, or like what's the stuff out that people could use?
I mean, I think they need to read a couple books, like, you know, like this is they need to just understand that I think they need to read a couple of books, like, and I would have some recommendations about, like, there's like Steve Krug has like these role, like Don't Make Me Think is just a classic. And it just gets you to the, it just breaks some of these like habits of like, it's like, oh yeah, like it doesn't matter how many clicks they have to do, as long as the clicks are mindless clicks and they're very easy and obvious. Like, you know, there's like rules like that that are just like, geez, that is like good, you know. But Don Norman too, I'd recommend Don Norman, like the father of the term UX. Like, I think just like starting in those, like they might have heard these things before, but like kind of just trying to understand the basics is like where I would recommend people start. Also the mom test, there's this, it's like, I think he was an indie hacker or something, but something called the mom test, where it's like the premise is your mom will always lie to you and tell you that your product idea is good. And so the whole thing about the book is like, how do you figure out if your product idea is good? And it teaches you like how to ask questions better, to figure out like, what do people actually need and what are they actually willing to pay for? Because people always lie about what they're willing to pay for too. They always say they will pay for something, but like when the rubber meets the road, they don't do it. So those three books, like the mom test, Don Norman's The Design of Everyday Things, and then Krug, I would recommend K-R-U-G. Like, Krug's books are, like, classics in my opinion. But I don't know, Eric, what do you think?
I mean, I've definitely read Krug's book. I haven't read Norman's book. It collects dust on a shelf.
Yeah, that's right.
I haven't read it, I'll be honest. My experience with Norman is actually more on his website. I think it's NM Group, NNM Group, Nielsen Norman Group. But I would actually send developers there, because I don't think I've ever seen a resource where, like, you can watch a 3-minute YouTube video on a design concept, and in those 3 minutes, it will
get it.
Just hit it. Like, and this is something you could just send someone, like a designer, you're trying to explain to a designer, like whatever, why this, how this thing should work, or why this is important. You could just hit them with like Nielsen Norman Group videos.
That's true.
Even their website. I'm sure it's probably a lot of the same information in the book, but it's just super skimmable and a lot easier to digest.
That's true.
So I would say like developers should probably start there, the Nielsen Norman Group. I also recommend Mobbin, Mobbin.
Yeah.
Which is like examples of real products, which I think is really, really useful. Because it's very, I mean, I think it's more common in Bitcoin where we actually are solving novel problems for the first time, but there's a lot of conventions actually out there.
Sure.
Like for example, the other day I was working on like an app, a design in order to split balances across mints, and that probably doesn't exist yet. Let's just be honest. Skylar and I are pretty familiar with the eCash wallets. I don't think that there's a UI for that exists, but there is something comparable. There's probably a lot of like apps that let you split bills across people at a restaurant. So like you can go to Mobbit and you can find something kind of related and think, okay, this is how like real products and real design teams have spent a lot of resources to tackling this problem in an actual product that is shipped. So you can reference that and kind of refer to that. More Bitcoin specific, I think Sahil started a new newsletter. Is it Studio 21? Mm-hmm. Is that the name of his newsletter?
Yeah.
It's really good. I think he's only had like two instances so far, but it's like once a month, and it's just like really well written. Yeah. It's written really well, and it's like good examples. It's not just a very lazy example, like, oh, this wallet launched a new feature and it looks really beautiful. Like, no, he'll actually take time to like highlight something that's really, really important and useful at a bit of a deeper design level. So his newsletter is good. And then I got to show like the Bitcoin.design community. I think that's really useful for developers and engineers to reference, because there's a lot of like best practices and conventions there that they can reference for various things. Like maybe a lot of it is maybe for smaller UI things, like how to display like an address and, you know, the most effectively so it's skimmable, or like best practices for like displaying like a 24, you know, seed word screen and having the user confirm it. These things that wallets do, a lot of different wallets do, there's already people that have spent time looking at them and kind of compiled the best practices in the easy reference. So yeah, those are like some things that come to mind that like founders and developers can refer to step up their design game.
That's excellent. Yeah, the Bitcoin.design thing is what kind of put all this on my radar, because I was like, this is dope. I'm not even a designer, and I'm like just scrolling stuff, you know, fascinated. But also, there's just so much siloing in Bitcoin, especially amongst ecosystems, to where like there's so much knowledge just kind of like locked in your guys' heads, and you guys don't have time to share it because you're just busy building shit that works. Mm-hmm. So glad people are doing that stuff. Also, I ask a question of like, what's the tools people should use, and you guys are like, first go to mindset, first go to like principles. You're gonna fuck up the tools and build something stupid. So.
Read the manual first.
Yeah. There'll be many links below that you guys should first go read. Cool. Well, we've been rolling for 45. I think we've got like 10-ish more minutes if you want to roll. I got no more real questions. I mean, I could ask a couple more that are on my docket, but I actually want to leave it open. Like, do you guys have anything super interesting that you just want to get off your chest, things that I didn't ask? What should people know?
I mean, one thing I've been thinking about recently is like how there's not that many use cases in Bitcoin to build real businesses around. And it's kind of like, it might sound like a downer topic, but I think it's just like a good red pill for a lot of people to take, which is like, understand, like seeing what types of businesses work and what types of businesses don't. It's just helpful for people to understand because, like, I'm sure you see this as an investor. It's like there's things that just aren't going to work until hyper-Bitcoinization, right? Yeah. I think there's, for now, there's, like, a couple things that work, and they work really well. And anything else is, like, worth pursuing, possibly, but it probably can't build a business around. So, like, I think there's, like, a lot of Bitcoiners, like, that want to work on Bitcoin, like, I think they should like try to get this wake up call as early as possible, because it's just very tough to do things in Bitcoin. Like, it grinds out the grifters, basically, which is actually a feature, but it also makes it harder to make money. And so it's harder to survive. And you see these people that are just like, they come up against this like truth machine, and the truth machine is like, no, you can't build that. And it just won't work. And then they get humbled. So I love Bitcoin for that reason, but it's also like very difficult, you know, to work on. So I think that's something that like a lot of people should talk about and think about more seriously. It's something I've been thinking about a lot.
Yeah. I mean, something that comes to mind is like, there's like the saying, like, if you build it, they will come. Well, that's not necessarily true for Bitcoin, because we might have a bias to think like, oh, like we can, you know, increase Bitcoin usage. People can start using Bitcoin every day or more often if we just build the right wallet, or if we just build the right UX or UI behind something like a hardware wallet, like this one. If we just make it super sexy and easy to use and sleek, we'll use it. But in reality, like, if the United States government says that it's a taxable event every time you spend Bitcoin, you have to think about that. Like what does that mean for adoption? And like, no amount of design or great product that you have is gonna change that reality. Or I could say the United States changing that and making it so that every time you spend Bitcoin, it is not a taxable event, can be something that is huge for Bitcoin usage, Bitcoin adoption. And that didn't require anyone designing a UI. It was a cultural thing. It was a social thing outside of the control of an engineer, of a business person, of a product person. So I think when we think about like, what does Bitcoin look like when, you know, millions of people are using it, or as a lot more people are using it, it's important to not think only in terms of products, solutions, things that are built, but it's important to think in terms of like, okay, what things have changed culturally, politically, like in terms of people's consciousness that that allows them or encourages them or makes them want to use it. And I suspect some of those things will actually not be products or businesses. It'll be other factors in society.
Yeah. Well, even your point about the U.S. Taxable event thing, Don Norman talks about this concept of UX being like, the UX is not just the screen. It's like the whole journey before you got to the screen too. And like the state that you live in, the country that you live in, the government that you live under is part of the UX of Bitcoin, whether people realize it or not, is like they're decisions like change your user experience, because like the laws affect, there's this trickle down effect all the way down to your hand. So it could be a design problem for a very ambitious designer that's saying, I want to solve the most fundamental problem, which is like, I'm going to go to the government and like effectively change their minds. Like maybe, you know, maybe Cynthia Lummis is a designer, you know, like maybe Donald Trump is the ultimate designer here when he is, you know, normalize Bitcoin. But like, there's like this, so like there's different problems to solve at different levels. Some are solved by UIs, some are solved by like politicking, some are, you know, there's like different things. Art can probably solve like the consciousness problem too, like really good art. But yeah, I think that's a good point that there are a lot of different things contributing to the adoption and usability. But like fundamentally, like NGU is the most, I would say NGU has product market fit for Bitcoin. Like whether people, like, I don't know if people like to admit this or not, but it's like, stacking sats and holding them for a long time and having the purchasing power go up is like the number one benefit to Bitcoin. Spending it is spending it, like, you know, in a censorship resistant way is another use case, but like NGU is just like the top, right? And it's just something to grapple with, because it's like, that's just when you like having humility to admit that, like, okay, hoarding this asset is probably the best use case, or the has best product market fit. It's kind of grinds the gears of a lot of people that want to impose their will on the world, which is no, this is a spending thing. That's it. And it's like, well, dude, look at what's happening. Like you have to be honest about the reality and humble to admit like what is actually happening with this asset. I know you wanted it to be this like weird definition of cash, like, you know, Roger Ver, but like, it's not in some ways, and there's reasons why. But like, so that's something too, is like, are we humble enough to admit like what this asset is in the reality versus what we want it to be, and how do we like navigate between these two sometimes paradoxical visions is like a difficult thing, but it's important to constantly be figuring this out, I think.
Yeah. No, it's a sobering thought, because like innovation typically comes from three areas. It's either technological, which Bitcoin already is, it's regulatory, so it's like, you know, not getting taxed, or it's consumer sentiment or like market behavior.
Yeah.
And like those latter two are hopefully coming to Bitcoin, but like I'm skeptical on the last one, because most of the world is just poor, like with paycheck to paycheck. So it's like they don't have the abundance to think about their money. They just want to know, do they have enough in their account? So like that's going to be a longer tail thing for hyper-Bitcoinization. But it's good. And it's tricky too with investing, because what's useful and what's investable can be very disconnected, especially like I would love to fund more open source stuff, but I have no concept of return there, so I just can't do it. Like thankful for Jack and what he's doing, but like he's a one of one, a one of a few.
Yeah.
And investors will invest in all kinds of crazy stuff for like trying to get the 100,000x potentially if that does click. So it's definitely hard for a founder to sit in that thought of like, should I build this? Is this worthy? And kind of like red pill themselves. Mm-hmm. But okay, hard left turn. Last question of the day, though. And let's end on a slightly higher note. What are you guys most excited about right now? It could be any topic, and you know, regular life or Bitcoin or design. What are you guys most hyped about right now?
Oh, that's a tough one to answer on the spot.
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is, I hate saying this. It just sounds like a cop-out, but AI is very interesting to me. Like watching normies adopt this thing is like just fascinating, you know, because I'm like, a lot of techie people adopt it, right? Like they use it to write code. I've been using it to like do front end code, and it's unbelievable. Like Cursor, the text editor Cursor, it's unbelievable, dude. I'm like, make this look like this, and it just does it, and it writes the code, and I'm like, do it in Tailwind, and it's like, yeah, it's like use this color in Tailwind, and it's like, I just use normal language, and it's writing like good front end code. Dude. That
you
is
just
great.
Propelled me,
dude. You got to try it. I mean, it is like unbelievable. Because like if you have a somewhat of knowledge of like how HTML and CSS work and just basic front end stuff or even React, that AI will bridge all the gaps. You know,
perfect. Because so, I can recognize what the component looks like a React component, but I can't actually. But yeah, that's all I need to know. I can just recognize the pattern.
Yeah, and like you might not even need to do that. You can be that like. You know, I just don't, like, you can be very broad and it will sometimes give you good stuff. So it's a very, I don't know, AI is very interesting. I think it's going to unlock so many different use cases. Like Bitcoin has very few use cases, which is why it's good. But AI also like unlocks all these different use cases for a lot of people. And that's just like interesting to me. So I'm not pivoting, but you know, I think there's like, I am interested in it.
Dope. And also, I'm going to cut this out, but I actually have a call after jump too.
Oh,
I'll be in a couple minutes late. So that's my bad. But I want to get your quick take, Eric, on what are you most excited about? And then we'll close this down.
Geez, what am I most excited about? God, I don't know. I mean, what have I been doing? I
mean, you're doing it right now.
Well, I'm excited about the stuff that I work on. I'm excited about the protocols that I work on. That's why I work on them all day. Yeah. Well, I could say that I'm excited to see the very like organic growth of Cashew. Of the eCash protocol. I'm excited to see the people that are willing to devote their time and energy to this open source eCash project that has absolutely no business model. And is purely based on, hey, there's potentially some really cool things that you can do with this protocol and this technology. And people are motivated by that alone enough to spend a lot of time building really innovative things. And that to me is exciting. It feels like I should just feel really excited every day that I get to work on it. It's like when I was a kid and I got the Nintendo 64 for the first time. You know, like you just wake up the next day, you wake up super early, and you're just like, I have, you know, an N64 with like Mario 64 and Zelda,
that
and
smell,
you can't
that
wait.
Plastic smell, so good.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like that again. And I feel very lucky to feel that way because as I've gotten older, I realize that people like in my 30s, as old as I am, some people don't have something like that in their life. They don't have something that they can just jump into that puts them in this state of flow and focus and they're excited about. So I'm very excited to have that. And I also kind of understand that it might go away one day. So I cherish it very much because if that fails, if Bitcoin fails or if this thing goes away, I'll be pivoting to AI.
I love it.
I don't know what I'd do. I'd probably do like piracy stuff, peer-to-peer, like file transfer.
That's fucking awesome. Man, this has been a fantastic episode. I'm going to have so much work clipping out all the bangers that you guys dropped. So
nice.
Thank you. Thank you to you guys. I'm sure the founders are going to enjoy this one. So appreciate what you guys do and what you guys are working on. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Man.
It was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on, YouTube, does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So love to talk to you. You can hit me up again. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right, peace. It's gone up. We playing the long game to the black rock chains with the rocks paid off from the blockchain. Going up high octane, so we up in here like pomade. Making big noise, big money. Go play with your kid toys. You funny, I'm counting my Bitcoin. We up and we been gone. It's gone up. Planned it out and we did this purposefully. Panning out like the kitchen currently. It's like surgery. Way it's earning me. A nurse's salary for cryptocurrency. Woo. I'm on a vacay drinking coconuts while wearing polka dots. This ain't no hocus pocus. Listen up and learn. It's gone up.